Howdy, folks. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of TGC Midweek. This week, special edition of the podcast. Michael is out of town doing something. I don't know.
He's at UT.
That's right.
RUF.
Well, we've got a special guest on the pod this week, Adam Lopez, joining us, our new church planting resident. Is that the official title?
Yes, that's good enough.
It's good. What is it? Because
technically, it's assistant pastor of church planting, but also says pastoral resident on the back.
Resident. It doesn't okay. really. I knew that. That
yeah.
That there was that in there somewhere. So, Adam, great to have you on the pod.
I'm glad to be here. Thank
good.
You.
Well, gentlemen, question of the week this week: what is the best invention ever? Best invention, most important invention ever.
That's easy.
Oh, okay, okay.
Considering the summer we just had, air conditioning.
Ooh, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah, that's for me. I'm not even sure how people survived here in San Antonio without air conditioning in the summer. That was just brutal.
Yeah, last summer was brutal. My mother-in-law, I think, my wife's going to listen to this and then tell me, you made that up. That's not true. But I think her family grew up in San Antonio without air conditioning. And that's just one generation removed.
That was a generation that used to like plant trees in strategic areas of the house, right?
I have no idea.
Like
I just
so that the trees would provide the shade in the evening to kind of keep it in the 90s, even if it was 100 and something. I know that there are families in San Antonio, like some of the older houses, that you can go and they'll tell you the story of like, yeah, they planted these and it works.
Yeah.
Like you can see how it works in the summer that they strategically planted trees. It's pretty amazing. I can see how that works.
Interesting. The invention of air conditioning does correspond with massive migration patterns to the South and Southwest. It's like nobody lived in the hot climates before then. And then William Carrier, I think his first name was William. I can't remember. The Carrier guy invented air conditioning. And then that's when that allowed people to move to the Sun Belt.
That's really cool.
Really? I didn't know that.
So that is an important invention. I didn't even think of that.
Very important. You know what? I'm going to go with something a little more day-to-day here. I'll say running water.
Okay. Yeah.
Plumbing.
Yeah.
I think that's...
indoor plumbing?
Yeah, indoor plumbing is an absolute must. Necessity.
I'm going with the like zipper.
That. Very good, too.
The zipper. The humble zipper. Think of everything you own that has a zipper. You wear one most days.
That's right.
Okay.
It closes bags.
It does.
The zipper. And it's the only thing that I think it's one of the only contraptions that's named after the noise that it makes.
Is that true?
I think so. You might say that in the Midwest where they call a remote a clicker, that might be also one, but that's a regional distinctive.
You're a word guy. So what was that onomatopoeia when the words sound like?
Yeah, but I don't know there's probably another word for a thing that's named after the noise that it makes.
Yeah, that's you true.
Know? I don't know. Now I'm trying to think of other ones.
Well, folks, if you have one, go ahead and text into the show or email the show because those are always fun factoids that we talk about usually before the pod.
Yeah. Yeah, usually I have a good answer, but I just wrote down the question and then drove over here. And so I asked it and I was like, I need to think of something now. So, win-win zipper. All right. Adam.
Yes.
So, you're... still fairly new to our church community. A lot of folks have gotten to know you, but maybe some haven't, especially as our church has grown and Sunday is kind of a hustle and bustle sometimes. So I want to just ask you to tell us about yourself. Give us your story.
Sure. So I grew up in Southeast Texas in a little town called Bridge City. It's between Orange and Port Arthur, Golden Triangle area. Shout out there. Grew up in a Southern Baptist home. Was at church every time the doors opened. Actually, my wife is from the same small town, and we met in high school. It's a fun fact. We've been dating since she was 16, and then we got married, of course. And so went to church every time the doors were open and was baptized at a young age. But really, my life never changed, didn't show any fruits of saving grace, of God's graciousness in my life and salvation. And I just lived as a dark sinner for a long time. And eventually, in my later 20s, the Lord changed my heart completely, saved me from my sins, from damnation, brought me into the light, saved my marriage, saved my family, saved everything about my world. And ever since then, I have just been passionate to read the Bible, to learn what it says. And a growing passion came to explain it to other people. So I started getting involved a little bit at a PCA church where we started attending. That was about 5 minutes from our house. And did some men's Bible studies, some Sunday school classes, and just received some good feedback on that kind of stuff and encouragement to pursue seminary by my assistant pastor at the time. His name was Mitch. And so I applied. There's a whole lot of stuff I'm flying over.
Yeah.
But you guys can come back and ask me after this. But basically ended up going to seminary eventually. God called us to seminary. And then took a call in North Austin in Cedar Park at Emmanuel Presbyterian Church, and then now here. So a lot of stuff in between, of course, called to church planting, all that kind of stuff. Would love to speak more about that.
Yeah, we will definitely get there for sure. So you grew up southeast of Houston. Can you tell me about a little bit your maybe early adulthood, what you did when you got married, what you did for a living before?
Yeah, absolutely.
Everything you just discussed.
Yeah, I grew up working in a grocery store called Market Basket. It's a locally owned business down there in southeast Texas. And started out as a bag boy, eventually became, I started doing what was called the milk shift, which was like a bunch of dairy, frozen food specials, cleaning bathrooms, doing specials throughout the store, milk, bread, eggs, different stuff like that. Then I moved up to being a stocker, and then went from there to being a warehouse manager at a different store, and then ended up coming back to that store and working all the way until I graduated high school. So I worked in the same grocery store basically.
Okay.
From the time I was 16 until 22. And then I got a degree in accounting, actually, an accounting degree from Lamar University in Beaumont, and pretty quickly realized that accounting was not what the Lord really wanted me to do. I didn't know that at the time. I just knew that I did not like accounting. So I was removed from that sphere, and I went back to work actually at Lowe's for a time, and I thought, oh, this is it's really my speed, the whole kind of, big box retailer stuff, fast pace, customer service, lots of things to do, lots of people to talk to, really like that environment. And so I was looking at that and as a long-term career whenever my wife suggested to me about possibly becoming a police officer, because I wanted to go to work for the FBI with my accounting degree. It's what I had really wanted to do. Forensic accounting, fraud examination, all that kind of stuff. So I went through the process and applied and got accepted. So we moved to Houston in 2006. And from 2006 all the way until May of 2016, I was there working as a police officer in Houston. Okay. On the north side.
What part of Houston?
So it is north of 610.
Okay.
Everything that is west of Hempstead Highway, east of the Hardy Toll Road.
Okay.
All the way up to West Road, West Mount Houston, and Greens Point, all that
gotcha.
Area.
Okay. Tell us more about being a cop. What was that experience like?
It was a pretty fun experience for the most part.
Okay.
Pretty exciting career. Lots of great stuff about being in law enforcement. It was a big part of my life, shaped me in a lot of different ways. I don't know what specifics you want to know about it, but I mean, I've...
Give us like one or two cop stories.
Cop stories. All right.
Were you on patrol? And
yes.
What area of...
North Houston.
No, not not in this geographic area, but what was your role in the police force? Street?
It was street patrol. Okay. So I had a car and drove around every night. Worked on night shift for all but 2 years. Worked evening shift on a special unit for like 2 years. In between there. And then my last three that I worked back on night shift again.
Oh, wow.
But worked on nights and, just go in at night at 11 o'clock, get off at 7 in the morning, and just be out there and answer calls, really. It's up to you what kind of police career you want. You can do all kinds of stuff in the police department, especially big cities like Houston. But you can just run calls. You can just write reports. Just depends on what kind of guy you are. So there's all kinds of things to do. Really just a whole bunch of stuff, really.
Yeah.
Really fun.
And what size is the family at this point? Is you guys is just the two of you, or are you?
So whenever I graduated the academy, we had just my daughter, my oldest daughter.
Okay.
Fallon, who's now 18. And then we had my son in 2009. And then 2012, my youngest daughter. Okay. So whenever I left, we had three. And now we have a fourth. Mm. So
nice. Yeah.
Okay. So how did you, you're a cop. Tell us more about this conversion experience, because you said your whole life kind of turned around.
Yeah.
What led you into that? Like, are you going to church at the time, but it's kind of,
yeah,
I don't know, going over your head or something? Like, what?
Yeah, it's just rote, I think. I mean, growing up in the Southern Baptist Church, being there all the time, I mean, it's just how we did life.
Okay.
We were just always there. And whenever I was working as a cop, I mean, it was the same thing. We were always going to a church.
Okay.
And we would go to small groups. But I would not, like, enjoy those experiences very sure. much. It was just kind of like, this is just the thing that we do. This yeah. is how we live. And so, yeah, I mean, basically, like I said, I mean, my life really didn't show any fruits at all until it was years later in my 20s. And I mean, there was just a lot of darkness. And, mm-hmm. and I say this to everybody who I tell my story to, basically, but, you know, whenever you're in sin and living apart from God, and you work at night too,
oh.
and you just are always around, there's truly nothing good that happens after midnight. Yeah. That is true. The saying is true. And you're just surrounded by darkness all the time, inside of you and outside of you. You see, like, the worst.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say particularly in bigger cities. You see it everywhere in every police station, police department, small towns, but you're just around so much of it on a constant basis yeah. in a big city. It's just constant. And so it was just really dark for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no idea about this, but my wife, whom I love so much, she would continually tell me, you know, hey, you're not quite the same person, you know, you're something different about you. And I would always say, no, you're crazy. You don't know what you're talking about. And it wasn't until my life had basically spiraled and it was just sin and darkness and secrecy and hiding all the time that really God really shined the light on what Jesus did.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't even explain all the different pieces, like, in so many different ways. Like, how did I end up listening to these radio programs, like, of preachers? I have no idea. Why would I want to do that? Like, but I was. And why would I be really touched by certain sermons, certain things that I would hear in a sermon, and then I'd be like, wow, that's kind of interesting, you know? And then, but looking back on it, it's the Lord putting the right pieces in the right time.
Yeah.
To where it all comes together. And then it resulted in a changed life completely.
Okay.
So, I don't know if that's really answering what you're asking me right now. I'm just kind of trailing right now.
No, that's fine. And I was going to kind of ask if there was a mentor that you had that led you in this direction, or something that you read or heard, but it sounds like that there was just kind of a consistency of influences and factors that along the way just kind of won over.
Yeah, I think that over time, maybe. So I will share, I grew up Southern Baptist, of course, and I grew up being told that Reformed people, Calvinism, is evil. It's of the devil.
No.
They're hateful people. They don't love anybody. They think they're the only ones going to heaven, so on and so forth. I grew up being told that. And whenever that change came and God changed my heart, I knew that there was no way I could have gotten myself out of everything that I was into. I knew that there was no way possible that I would have ever chosen. I mean, we left to ourselves, we just continue down the path.
Yeah.
We just continue. And I knew that that wasn't true. And I started listening to this teacher named R.C. Sproul. I mean, you guys, don't throw me out of here right now, but
this podcast is sponsored by Ligonier Ministries.
So. Might as well be.
So I started hearing all these things from R.C. Sproul about the doctrines of grace, and I started remembering these are things that I was told were the opposite.
Mm.
But whenever I was told that stuff, I didn't care back then. I was like, what's a Calvinist? I don't know what that is, right? Yeah. So years later, I'm listening to all this stuff and I've had this heart change and I'm like, all this stuff, like I was reading it in the Bible as I was listening to it. I was checking it, mm-hmm. you know, like a Berean. I was looking back and saying, is this really the case?
Yeah.
And I was seeing that it was all true. And like the Old Testament, everything kind of opened up for me finally. Like the whole Bible just made sense
mm-hmm.
in a way that it never had before in my life. It was kind of just, hey, these are the stories. And it would seem like preaching would just be trying to tell you how to be more like those people, maybe.
Yeah.
But that's how I heard it then, right? I'm sure that all the preachers that preached were preaching God's grace all along.
Mm-hmm.
I just never heard it.
Sure.
And whenever that happened, when that change came, I could hear grace from all the pages sure. of Scripture. Uh-huh. And it changed my life, and it just made me hunger for that.
How did you stumble upon R.C. Sproul?
It was listening to radio programs.
Okay.
Early in the morning.
Your cop car? Or
After work.
Okay.
I had an extra job I went to after work sometimes. And I just was starting to listen to, it was a Christian radio, talk radio program on AM. And there was like Adrian Rogers, and there was Michael Youssef, and I don't know, there's a few others in there that you guys probably would know, and I can't remember their names now.
Alistair Begg, probably.
Maybe so, but R.C. Sproul was on there for, okay. 30 minutes.
Yeah,
and for sure. I started particularly looking forward to listen to that portion.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I stumbled onto him. Yeah.
R.C. Sproul was a huge part of my own journey as well. I remember picking up a book at a Christian bookstore called Chosen by God.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what set me on the, big R.C. Sproul, influenced guy.
Awesome. I was hoping to hear him one day. I was in seminary when he passed and I was I was sad.
It's
never got to go to a conference and hear him actually teach or preach. So it's one thing I always wanted to do.
Yeah. Yeah. It would have been, you say that and then, knowing my luck, the one time I would get to go to see R.C. Sproul in a parallel universe would be the, what's that line when he yells at the crowd? How dare you people or something? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do. It was a conference when somebody asked him
it was a pretty benign question or something.
Well, it's something about like God being just or nice or something.
Yeah.
And he basically just brought it back to, you don't know who you are.
Yeah.
And you don't know the holiness of God.
I can't believe I'm forgetting that line. It was something along the lines of, what's wrong with you people? That's what it was. And he's all oxygen tank, and curmudgeonly, what's wrong with you people? So, go ahead, G.
Yeah, no, I was just curious. So you have a wife and family essentially at the time that the Lord gets a hold of your heart, where are they in their relationship with the Lord at this time? Or probably your wife, just more, is she experiencing the same thing with the church kind of day in and day out? Or is she kind of,
she's always been a true Christian the whole time I've ever known her. And, I always tell people she is like the epitome of the First Peter wife who, by her actions, by her quiet demeanor, that just changes her husband. Like I've always talk about her like that. She is, she's just incredible. Always been, even when I was so far. Gotcha. And she continually loved me. That's actually a big part of me understanding God's grace in my own life. God's grace in Jesus taking my sin and forgiving me of everything that I'd ever done, everything I ever will do. I had the experience I had, I had sinned against my wife a lot, like greatly. And my wife completely forgave me. And that was like a huge turning point in my life. And I really realized the depth. Just scratching the surface, of course, right? Like none of us really fully get what Jesus did for us when he hung there and he took the punishment for everything, right? Yeah. None of us really gets that.
Well, it'd probably psychologically break all of us.
It would destroy us. Right, right. So like none of us really knows it, but I say it like, you know, for sure. I realized just how the depths, the great lengths that Christ went just to bring me to himself. And that was just a complete reversal of everything that was going on in my life. So, yeah, super thankful for Jesus and for my wife.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome.
So, you start to become more interested in the Reformed tradition. How did you get from listening to R.C. Sproul in your car in the early mornings to now I want to go to seminary?
Yeah, it's a big process, but took a few years, couple of years, I guess. But I really wanted to grow in my faith really quickly, and I found out that there was a Reformed Theological Seminary in Houston, and I was like, oh, wow, this is great. Like, I could go there, and I could just learn. I want to take systematics. That's really the main thing I wanted to take at the time. And I thought, well, maybe if I just continue to take courses, maybe one day I could be like an elder or something like that. And because at the time, once God changed my heart, I really felt and saw for the first time in my life the actual need and importance of the local church.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to be there like all the time. Mm-hmm. Anytime there was something going on, I wanted to take part. I wanted to be there in some way, shape, or form. And so I thought, well, I'll just want to be a elder in a church. That would be great, you know? And as that happened, I was looking into all these courses and I was thinking about ways I could take them, trying to figure out how I could pay for things like that. And I was spending a lot of time looking into them and thinking about, oh, the next semester, maybe I'll do it next semester. And one of my pastors from the church, he actually went to plant a church in a different part of town. He was there for like 6 months. And I had a meeting with him and I talked to him about seminary stuff. And he said, do you do anything well? And I said, well, what do you mean? He's like, well, are you a good cop? And I was like, well, yeah, I'm a good cop. You know, I do a good job at work. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, if you do something well, then don't go to seminary. He said, don't go into ministry. And I was like, kind of just like, I was, like my bottom, like dropped out of my heart. Yeah. I was just like, so sad.
That's funny. Like, my youth pastor growing up, when I had a should I do ministry kind of question, he goes, if you can do anything else, do it.
Exactly. Right. So I was like, I was bummed.
Yeah.
And I was like, man. And he said, the reason that I say that is because some of the stories you just shared with me earlier about these different situations and friends that you have and stuff, he said, I'm never going to hang out with those guys or be with those guys or get to work with those guys. He said, you get to do that and you get to be the best Christian where you are. He said, so if you can do something well, don't leave and go into ministry. Mm. So I thought, well, that's interesting take, right? And I respected his opinion a lot. So I ended up talking to my shepherding elder who was in seminary at the time. And he said the same thing to me. He said, just be a great Christian where you are and point others to Jesus. And so I prayed about it and I said, God, if you want this for me, like I've spent a lot of time thinking about it, just bring it up another time. And, you know, but I'm going to stop basically. So I shelved it for like probably about a year or a year and a half. That pastor moved on to go plant a church. We hired a new assistant pastor. I mentioned him earlier, got into his small group and we really enjoyed being with their family, really enjoyed my time with him, started asking him a lot of questions about theology and Greek and Hebrew and all that kind of stuff. And I kept asking him so many things. He finally told me one day, he's like, dude, why don't you just go to seminary? You know, like you're always asking all these questions. He's like, nobody.
Stop bothering me.
He basically said, that's basically what he said, right? He basically told me,
leave me alone.
He basically said, nobody cares about what you're asking about. Like, just go to seminary. So I was like, okay, well, I got what he was talking about, you know? Yeah. So I was like thinking, well, maybe I'll just be a little bit less invasive with my questions. Yeah. And a missionary came to town and from Bogota, Colombia, we supported him. And he was talking about the need for people to come help plant churches. And I was like, hey, this is really cool. And Kendall was like, yeah, that'd be really great. And so we started thinking about, well, we could go to Colombia to help plant churches. We could raise money to go do it. We could live over there and help plant a church from the ground up or whatever and reach people with the gospel. And like, you don't have to go to seminary for that. That's what I thought at the time. So we got involved with MTW, got on some phone calls, and they were prepping us for their vision week. Mm-hmm. And through a number of circumstances, we felt the Lord leading us not to do MTW. But instead, we ended up looking into Covenant Seminary at the encouragement of my assistant pastor.
Okay.
And at the time, you got a fire going on in your neighborhood, bro. anyway, at the time.
Don't know if it's picking up, but there's a fire truck driving by.
Yeah, so. Yeah, there's a fire truck. I think we're okay.
Maybe it's that firework stand.
Oh, no.
That one. That which we do not speak.
Oh, okay. I was passing that on the way in. I was like, huh. So as we were thinking about these things, my assistant pastor said, hey, why don't you apply? So I ended up applying and ended up going up there for a visit. And we came away feeling like whatever God was going to do with us in ministry, we should move and we should go to seminary up there and be trained. Really how to be a pastor is really what it was about. But at the time, I didn't know what we were going to do. Like, I didn't have a trajectory or like an idea of really wanting to be a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
We were just really interested in church planting and like, but the way it worked, it's those God things, like all these things falling into place that you would never be able to orchestrate yourself. And so we were like, no, we need to go. And everybody we talked to confirmed that as well. And we left. So, went up there for 4 years. Was that the question you were asking?
That's good.
Yeah.
It had 3 points. It was very structured. You're a great pastor. all right. So now you're at seminary, you do that whole gig. Was the church in Cedar Park, was that your first, pastor job after seminary? And then, I know you've said before that you're kind of thinking about church planning all along. So kind of take us through that. Why is church planning kind of the thing you can't get out of your head?
It's going to go back to kind of things that we think when we're on vacations and stuff like that. It's really kind of interesting. But from the very first, basically.
You're going to have to expand on that.
Yeah.
I'm thinking three margaritas deep going, dude, we should plant a church.
So Kendall and I really like to travel. We don't get to do it very often, but we love to go to new places. And whenever we do, from the beginning of the time after the Lord changed my heart, we would be driving through wherever we were, if we were like on our anniversary trip or something like that, or away for like a birthday or something like that. Driving through small towns here and there, or like wherever we were staying, and saying, huh, there's no PCA churches here. Because we were PCA people at the time. And I would just mention things, and she would just mention things to me. Like we would say, oh, it'd be pretty neat if, you know, there was a PCA church here. We could attend it on Sunday instead of looking for a different church to go to or whatever. And so we just started talking about stuff like that. And we were always mentioning, oh, it'd be cool to help plant a church in this small town. They need a PCA church out here. You know, there's nothing out here. And that was from the very start. And so whenever we joined the church and found out that our pastor was going to plant a church, we thought it would be really cool if we could go along with him and help plant the church and just be there forever. And that didn't happen because of just location. Our church at the time was 10 minutes from our house, and his church plant was going to be 45. So it didn't make sense for us to drive that far and pass up the other church. So it was really kind of that. And then all throughout seminary, we were wanting to go back to Houston and work there and then eventually plant a church. That was the goal. Once I really started feeling like I want to be a pastor for sure. And that was like basically in the first year of seminary, I was like thinking, now, I think I really do want to be in the local church. Like, I want to be a pastor. And so I went to this thing called the Church Planter Readiness Seminar that they put on in different parts of the country. They do one at Covenant every year, and was encouraged to do that, like to continue pursuing church planting, mm-hmm. just based on our story and everything else, and was granted an M&A apprenticeship, which they set up for the summers, but I was working full time, so I did it over the course of a year in St. Louis, and it was a wonderful experience. Really loved it. Learned a lot from the pastor I work with, Mark Tucker. And after that, just always looking ahead to coming back to Houston and then planting a church somewhere in the Houston area. Mm-hmm. And once we ended up candidating, the story would be too big to tell right now, but through a number of different circumstances, we ended up going to Cedar Park instead. And from the moment we landed in Cedar Park, people were telling us that the place where we actually lived, right up there, would be a really prime target for another PCA church on the north side of Austin. Mm-hmm. We had friends and neighbors coming to us asking us if there's a PCA church plant planned for that area. So we thought, well, God keeps bringing us people. People from our community group at church were interested in planting a church up there because they lived up there by us. Mm-hmm. And so all signs pointed toward that. And I kept going to network meetings all the time, Reach South Texas, and asking Luke questions. Luke's the chairman there. You guys probably know him. But just always staying engaged with church planting and wanting to do that work. And praying that someday, if the Lord would bring it to us, that the right situation, that we would be able to do it. And we got called and asked about this opportunity. And once we came and checked it out, we were like, yeah, we feel like this is a really good opportunity, mm-hmm. a really good place that's really healthy. And there's a great need out on the west side right now. So many people moving in out there still, and there's already a lot of people out there. Not really any Reformed churches out that way.
Sure.
Just an exciting opportunity, really. Yeah. So,
can you kind of take us through, I know it's still pretty early, but take us through how you're thinking about the Alamo Ranch area and the vision you have for a church out there.
Sure. You know, I really been thinking a lot about this. Kendall and I both have. I've been reading some different things here and there. And really want whatever church we plant to be a church specifically for that community.
Yeah.
Like really community engaged, and really just want it to look exactly like the people who are out there mm-hmm. living in that area. And, you know, right now there's a whole lot of road work going on. So I don't know that the traffic will always be terrible in different places at different times, but there's a whole lot of people going a whole lot of different places, and people have schedules to keep. Children have sporting events to mm-hmm. go to. People have life that they live, and it seems really fast paced, just like most of the suburbs are in every big city. But we just want to be a place where if our church suddenly disappeared, the community would be devastated that we were not there.
Yeah.
And so whatever that is like for that community, that's what we're wanting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Gee, you got some?
Yeah, I got two questions.
Go for it.
One, I know that there's a good number of our listeners, and actually our church in general, I would say, are animal lovers. We talked offline about your cute dog. If you could tell the audience a little bit about your dog and how.
Sure.
So yeah, it probably sounds weird for a church.
No, it's great.
Tell us about your pet. But there are a lot of pet lovers in our church, and I'm sure that they'd love to hear about you and how you came to
sure.
have your pet and that story.
Yeah, good story. It actually kind of stems back to seminary too. For going to seminary, we had to get rid of our cat and our dog before we went to seminary. We weren't allowed to have them on campus because we lived in campus housing.
Oh, wow.
And so we had to give our dog away and had to give our cat away. And that was really hard for our kids. And my youngest daughter, Shaylee spent 4 years almost nightly praying that we could have a pet. And so once we moved from seminary, we told our kids, hey, we will get a pet. So once we moved, we heard about what are called guardian programs. And basically what that entails is you get, you know, a girl dog and you agree to have the dog bred so many times, and then they give her to you at the end. You don't have to pay for her. So we had, we found our dog. Her name is Rosie, and she is an 85-pound Bernedoodle, black and white.
Okay.
And she's clumsy, and she likes to jump up on the counter and eat food if it's there and no one's watching, or she likes to lick plates that have some food on them. She's just very, very special. Yeah. And so we got her when she was probably, I'm probably going to mess this up. My family can correct me offline, but probably 3 months old, maybe.
Okay.
And she had two litters of puppies, and she's ours now. And we love her. And she's
great.
One of the members of our family. So yeah, for sure. Anybody who comes over, she would love to meet you. She will bark at you, but she will come around. She's really lovable.
So now, is that the hypoallergenic type of dog?
Yes.
Or? Okay.
Yes, it is.
Gotcha.
And yeah, but she can get pretty messy sometimes, though. It's kind of one of the things about her was that in our last house where we lived up in Leander before we moved, last summer was so hot.
Yeah.
And the summer before that, I mean, every summer in Austin, San Antonio is hot, right? But every summer it would kind of kill some of our grass, especially where she would run around in the backyard. And then I would have sprinklers on a couple of days a week, a few days a week, or it might rain. And then she would just get all muddy and track it all in the house. We'd have to clean everything. So we've had some growing pains with her, but she's great.
Yeah.
She's a great dog, man. And that's awesome. And the kids love her.
That's awesome. One other question. I think Jacob's got some other ones, but
sure.
I know we've talked offline about some of your musical capabilities.
Yeah.
So tell us a little about that and where that come from. Or I didn't get the full story when we were talking, yeah. But were you in a band at some point?
Yeah, I have been. So I grew up, my first love is art.
Yeah.
Did art from a young age. And then as I got older, I transitioned over into music.
Okay.
And my dad and my brother, my dad's a musician, has been ever since he was a really young boy. He taught my brother how to play the guitar when he was like 3. So my brother's a big time guitar player also.
Nice.
My dad has some songs that, if y'all are familiar with Mel Tillis, I don't know if y'all are,
yeah.
Country guy from back in the day, but he recorded a couple of my dad's songs. And
wow.
So my dad's real musical. So is my brother, just from a musical family. So like, I went to, in junior high, I joined band and joined percussion and actually pretty decent at it. So started learning the drum set because I wanted to get into jazz band.
Okay.
And play drum set for school. And I did that. And I've from an early age, I've been playing for a long time. I mean, not as early as some people like my brother, but I started in like 6th or 7th grade or something like that. So. But yeah, I'm a drummer.
Nice. Yeah. You have a kit at home? Or
I do have a kit. It's not set up, but it's in cases.
Nice. And,
ready to be pulled out at the right time.
Now, did any of the kids, you pass that on to, did they catch the bug?
No, they've never caught the bug. And I've had, they've had plenty of opportunities, I think. They enjoy taking the sticks and beating on the practice pad and being goofy. But
animal.
You know, they've never been so interested that they've really pursued it. So yeah.
Nice.
But yeah, we love music. Our whole family loves it. Not everybody plays it. I can play, but nobody else does.
Yeah. Gotcha. Well, that's awesome.
But yeah, I forgot. Yeah, you were asking about band. So like in aside from high school, like high school jazz band and marching band, a concert band, all that stuff. And then in college, I played in jazz band for 1 year. I also played with my dad and my brother for, I feel like a couple of years in college. maybe a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. But we did mainly covers, like classic rock, blues, you know, all that kind of stuff at a coffee shop, like once a month. And played in various circumstances for concerts and stuff like that for like certain Christian stuff going on at church, basically, things like that. We played some concerts. So, yeah, been playing for a long time. I haven't been playing recently in a band, but I have been working on some music with another friend back up in Leander, actually, recording some stuff with the hopes of playing sometime together.
That is awesome. Yeah. That's cool to hear.
So in addition to music, what other hobbies do you have? What other things do you like to do outside of church and work?
I do enjoy reading. I love reading theology books, of course, and books about ministry and church, but I do love reading other things other than that. So I enjoy reading when I can, whether it's like biographies or fiction or just whatever. I enjoy reading. I enjoy exercising. I like to run, although as I'm getting older, my knees and my ankles are increasingly not being able to take that, but I do love getting out and running. Mm-hmm. And listening to music, playing music. We enjoy eating nice food, like fine food, like going to nice restaurants when we can. And we love eating different food from other cultures and different things like that. We love trying new things.
Cool.
So that's something that's really special for us. And then I've mentioned before, but whenever we're able to travel, we like going to new places that we've never been.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's just kind of a selection of things there, I guess.
Cool. Yeah. Well, I've got a couple of lightning round, rapid fire kind of questions. Okay. Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Come on. Cake or pie?
That's kind of a toss up, but I'll go with cake on this one.
Ooh, controversial. Okay. Favorite sport?
Baseball.
Favorite team?
The Astros.
Of course. Yeah.
Sorry, buddy.
Heartbreaker a couple nights ago. Yeah.
Just for everybody listening, we've already squared this offline.
Yes, we have. It's all good.
Do you have a favorite kind of music or a favorite band or singer?
I have every kind of favorite music. Okay. I mean, I love Christian stuff. I love jazz. I love progressive rock. I love classic rock. I love blues. I love Latin music. I love everything.
Interesting.
Yeah. Jazz is my favorite, though, I would say.
Jazz is your favorite?
Jazz.
Okay. If somebody's just getting into jazz, where do they start?
I would start with Coltrane and Bill Evans.
Okay.
John Coltrane and Bill Evans.
Okay. Summer or winter?
I like them both, honestly.
Ooh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Beach or mountains?
I like mountains, although the beach is like 49.5%.
Oh, okay. It's close.
Yeah, I love both.
Slight nod to the
mountains. Yeah, I think slight nod to the mountains, yeah.
You said you like to travel. What's the your favorite place that you've been?
The most recent favorite place, I really enjoyed the Smoky Mountains. We went there a couple of years back.
Whereabouts in the
Smoky Out there by Pigeon Forge and all that. And then, so like, what is that word? Gatlinburg, all that area out there.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, we made a trip out that way and it's beautiful out there.
Gotcha. What's a place that you'd like to go that you haven't been to yet?
We've never been to Colorado. We would like
to
go
to Colorado.
No.
Okay.
We would like to go to Colorado one day. Yeah. We've seen the mountains from there, from a different state, but we've never been there.
Okay. Favorite ice cream?
It's got to be, I'm going to go with mint chocolate chip.
Ooh, that's good. Yes. Classic. Lord of the Rings or Star Wars?
They're both really great, but I'm going to have to go with Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
It's the reason I actually like reading.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay. Nice.
I got
a
story for that one day.
Favorite theologian or church related writer?
I like Herman Bavinck and John Webster.
Okay. Favorite president?
President? Wow, I don't have one. I don't know.
You haven't heard the stat that every American thinks of James K. Polk four times a day?
No, never heard that.
I made that up, G. Don't look at me like that.
I really don't have a favorite president. Okay. I've never thought about that one before.
Okay. Favorite movie?
Favorite movie. You know, I would have said The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, all six of those movies. Those are really tops for me. but I really like a lot of Christopher Nolan stuff. Okay. Not everything he's done, but I love like Interstellar. I love Tenet. I like all of the Batman movies, the three ones that he made. I like Man of Steel, The Prestige. I love some of his stuff.
Is he the one that did Oppenheimer?
Inception. He did Oppenheimer.
Have you seen that one yet? I haven't seen that one either.
You understood Tenet?
I've watched it 4 times, and I pick up stuff every time.
Okay. I need to watch it a couple more times.
I'm not a master yet, but I love the way Christopher Nolan works with time and everything he does.
He does.
It's really cool.
He makes you... I like him because he makes me work.
Yeah.
As an audience member. It's not just passive.
That's right.
It's you have to be active or else you are lost.
That's right. You have to be.
Yeah.
Well, that's all I've got. You got any... little questions at the end?
I kind of do in a way, and hopefully this is, I don't know. I think in my years of the PCA, a position kind of like yours, I don't know if I've seen it in a church. Yeah. So if there's anything that you can kind of explain, because it's almost like it is intentional temporariness. Almost,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of, and it's so it, and that's interesting from a church context.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you would want kind of the church to kind of know with kind of, hey, look for me for this, or, you know, this is how you can pray for me, or just kind of explain kind of the role and kind of how you want to slot in to the church a little bit to kind of explain it? Because it is rather a unique position that's, again, the temporariness is kind of built into it.
Sure. Yeah. So a couple of things, and this will kind of meander a little bit, but this position that I've been called to right now is really kind of it's the way that our network believes, you know, the denomination really should try and model church planning positions on stuff the way that they're doing it right now, which is kind of a joint partnership between the local church, wherever that is, the church planning network, and then the church planter. As far as like how it's put together, how it's funded, how it's, you know, and the way that this setup is supposed to work is that the church planter is supposed to come in, learn about the congregation where he's serving, and benefit and help that congregation in some measurable way, right? In other words, give something really good to the congregation, and at the same time, building relationships, meeting people wherever they are in their neighborhood, wherever their context is, right? With the hopes of planting from a position of strength. The stats aren't that great for church planters comparatively with other forms of planting is really the kind of the basis for that. And what I mean by it's harder in a lot of ways to go and scratch plant, which would be just arriving somewhere and just meeting people, not knowing anybody.
Right.
But really, if you have a really healthy church, which TGC is really healthy, that's a really great path to plant healthy churches out of.
Yeah.
And really, the whole benefit for everything is that TGC comes away with measurable things that are really good for the congregation that are going to help the congregation long term.
Yeah.
Church planter goes with having worked on those things himself. So that stuff that the church planter can then bring into his own church that he plants. And then just long term relationships are built, friendships are built. Everybody is praying for this family, this group of people who's going. And it's a chance for the sending church to be a part of God's mission, being a church that multiplies, which is really what every church should be doing anyway, right? And so it's just really kind of a all around. It's a really good process, I really think. And I think it's going to be really helpful, not only for Trinity Grace, but I think it's going to be wonderful for the church that we will plant, Lord willing, when it comes. I don't know if that's a sufficient answer for you, but
No, it's great. You know, it's one of these things where I know when we planted Trinity Grace, we all had the desire and the vision to be a planting church. That's like that 30,000 foot. Yeah, that's a good thing. Nobody comes in and say, hey, we just want to be insulated and navel gazing.
Right.
We wanted to be a planting church. I don't know if saving except for Michael, maybe the elders, we knew that what that process looked like.
Sure.
Practically, of how does that actually come to fruition for yeah. Trinity Grace to be a planting church. So this is kind of I think everyone's excited, but it's also eye-opening with like yeah. lots of questions like, okay, well, this is kind of, I guess sure. this is what this looks like to do this.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, it's fun. We're excited to have you. I'm excited yeah. to have you and to meet you. And yeah. we've had a number of great conversations. So I look forward to tomorrow.
Likewise. We're super excited to be here. Feel really blessed by the Lord and blessed by all of the relationships we've already made so far. I mean, we're really looking forward to seeing what God's already doing, right? That's the yeah. whole, the whole point of this is that God's already doing stuff and putting pieces together, and we get to see what those pieces are and become a part of, you know, spreading the kingdom. It's exciting.
Absolutely. So
we're happy to be here.
Well, Adam, thanks for joining us tonight and sharing a bit of your story and your vision for the Alamo Ranch area. If folks want to get in contact with you to learn a little bit more or how they can partner with you in your efforts, how can they get a hold of you?
Sure. They can get a hold of me. Email adam@trinitygracesa.org, or they can call or text. I mean, do I say my number on this right now?
If you really, really want to, you can.
You can just,
or yeah, maybe folks can email you first and then.
Sure,
and then,
sure.
Yeah.
Get deeper yeah. That way. Email is probably the best way, actually, because yeah. I file all that stuff. So it's good for me. Email's okay. best. But very yeah, good. Just grab me on Sunday. I'm always willing to step aside and talk. I'm never too busy to talk to anybody. This is what I want. I want to meet people and talk about what's going on, you know?
Yeah. yeah.
So
very good.
Awesome.
Well, folks, hope you've enjoyed this episode of TGC Midweek. If you have questions, we're getting back into our Westminster Confession series next week. If you've got questions, you can send those to questions@trinitygracesa.org. We look forward to hearing from you. And until next time, we'll see you later.